I want to try something a little different from meditation this morning. Meditation comes in many forms. My life is joy practice, which is sort of a walking meditation, but you'll hear more about that next week. Shameless plug. One of the other meditations that works really well for me is singing. I find that singing not only helps you control your breath, but the more you sing a particular song, the more familiar you become with it. It becomes like a meditation. It just goes, you sing it without thinking about it, and you're focused. One of my favorite songs to do this with is Though I May Speak with Brave as Fire. I'm going to do that as the meditation this morning, and I apologize. I thought I was in better voice, but I'm going to try it anyway.
Though I may speak with bravest fire and have the gift to all inspire, I have not love, my words are vain as sounding brass and hopeless gain. Though I may give all I possess, and giving all my love profess, and not be given by love within, the prophet soon grows strangely thin. Come Spirit, come, our hearts control. The Spirit longs to be made whole. Let inward love guide every deed. By this we worship and are free.
Our speaker this morning is Paul M. Porter, who was ordained in the Christian Church Disciples of Christ Ministers 60 years ago in his home state of Indiana. He has served churches in Indiana, Ohio, Florida, and Georgia. He earned a Bachelor of Arts degree from Butler University with a double major in religion and sociology. He earned a Master of Divinity degree from Christian Theological Seminary. Paul and his second wife, Jean, moved to LAJ in 2007 because Jean had Alzheimer's and she needed to be near her daughter who lived here. When caregiver support group was formed to provide support for Alzheimer's disease caregivers, Paul was asked to lead this group, and he did so for 8 years. He and Nancy have been married for 8 years, and they share 7 children, 18 grandchildren, and 18 great-grandchildren. Please join me in welcoming Paul Porter, and his sermon today is Encounter with the Holy.
Thank you, Casey. For those who are interested, the chalice that's on this stool is the logo for the Christian Church, Disciples of Christ. I won't bore you with the history of why that got there, but the thing that's interesting is that this is a cross of St. Andrew, which honors our Presbyterian roots, and that's what that is. If you see that chalice with the St. Andrew's cross on it, it doesn't mean that we're non-drinkers. It means that we're descendants of St. Andrew. Yesterday evening, the news was kind of grim. we had another mass shooting. Again. They were reminding us on the television this morning that we have about 300 of those in one time or another every year. It's a bit much. And what is the phrase that they always use when they begin that kind of thing?
Thoughts
and prayers. Why did they say thoughts and prayers? It's because a lot of people are not really sure that prayer works. I'm here to tell you, I will firmly believe that it does, and that we can connect with one another, and I will illustrate that as we go along. Now, when I was a kid growing up, from time to time, in that culture, they would have people come through and they would do chalk talks. I don't have chalk. I have marker. Now I work. All right. We will do that. But I want to set it up by reading a portion of the 139th Psalm. You probably have, some of you I'm sure have heard it and shared it. This is a translation, a relatively recent translation, by John Alter, who is a well-known Jewish rabbi who is a fine Hebrew scholar, and he has recently completed a complete translation of the Old Testament. But this was the one component of it. By the way, you can buy the complete one for more money than I have. It's only $200. I forget what I paid for this. I've been something of a student of the Psalms over the years. And anyway, let me share this with you. Hear the words of our Hebrew ancestors. Lord, you search me and you know. It is you who know when I sit and I rise. You fathom my thoughts from afar. My path and my lair, you will. And in all my ways, you are familiar. For there is no word on my tongue, but that you, O Lord, wholly know it. From behind and in front, you shake me and you set your palm upon me. Knowledge is too wonderful for me. High above, I cannot attain it. Where can I go from your spirit? And where from before you flee? If I soar to the heavens, you are there. If I bed down in Sheol, you are there. If I take wing with the dawn, and if I dwell at the ends of the sea, there too your hand leads me, and your right hand seizes me. Should I say, yes, darkness will swallow me, and the night will be light for me. Darkness itself will not darken for you, and the night will light up like the day, and the dark and the light will be one. The Eternal One is with us, day or night, near or far. The Holy One is there. Several years ago, it was my privilege to sit in a roundtable discussion in my parish in Highland, Indiana, when Morton Kelsey was there. Morton is an Episcopal priest, who served a large church in California. And he was trying, he was a student of Carl Jung. Carl Jung is a Swiss psychiatrist, contemporaneous with Freud. He had a more open view of life than Dr. Freud. And so he was the one that put me onto this. And what I'm going to be sharing with you now is on this board are some illustrations that he gave us. When he retired from being a pastor in California, his retirement occupation was to be a professor of education, religious education, at Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana. So he has, I think, fairly broad credentials. So one of the things that he did was to draw us a picture. And so I'm going to try to do that for you so that it makes sense. He begins by dividing time like this. This is all past time. You familiar with that symbol?
Yeah.
That's a figure eight down on side. Infinity. There is no limit to all that one. This side of the line is time and space. It's present time, right here, right now. Now, of course, a line like that's kind of artificial, and I understand that. But the point is that this is one way of dividing it up, and you let all those senses we go along. One of the things that I'm concerned for is to somehow understand and deal with the issue of the whole. Martin Kelsey's book is called The Encounter with God. But I've chosen to use the title Encounter with the Holy out of respect for those of you who find that word difficult. But I will deal with that in a moment. But what he does is he says, we take it and have an experience which goes like this, off into infinity, like this. And that's the holy.
Sorry,
what? That's the holy.
Oh.
All right. Now you get to share in this little speech. What are your names for the holy? I'm going to write them down. So you tell me what to write. All right?
The Prince of Peace.
All right. Someone else? All right.
Source.
Okay.
I sometimes call it the love force.
All right, the love force. Put down stars.
Okay. That works.
All right, that's it.
All that is.
All that is.
All
This old man doesn't write very clearly, but you can read it, I guess.
The big oak tree.
B for big.
Big. Translating that becomes
our Lord.
Lord. Very good. Yes?
When I want to personify it a little more, I call it your mother.
Okay. Yes, Ed.
Hashem. H-A-S-H-E-M.
That translates?
That translates into what?
The name.
It means the name.
The name.
As a reference to God.
Okay.
Interesting.
All right. We've got quite a spread of them. Go ahead.
Two words. Two words, A-W-E for awe, and full, F-U-L-L. So awe.
You're saying what?
He said all full.
Okay.
And my ground was all being.
Okay. Yes.
We like to say that the World Wide Web, of which we are all a part, that you can just put W-W-W.
Those of you who are at least part-time students of the Old Testament may know that the tetragrammaton, that big fancy long word about like that, in Hebrew is never pronounced. It's YHWH. In most Bibles, it is English translations of the Bible, with one notable exception I know about. That's always printed Lord. Now, the reason for that is that our Hebrew ancestors felt that the word was too holy to speak. They didn't even put vowel marks on them. And so how to write that in English has been a source of conflict and discussion. Our German friends and scholars of the Middle Ages came up with a pronunciation called Jehovah. They don't really think that works. But you see it in American experience as the Jehovah's Witness. But what they're doing is picking up that old term. We now call it Yahweh. And never to be spoken. Yes?
The Hebrew actually is closer to Jehovah because it's Yud-Heh, Vav-Heh, and the Vav is pronounced B.
All right, you're smarter than I am as your Hebrew. and that's why I look that way. In some portions of American society, Allah is used. And as far as I'm concerned, this whole thing goes here. All of a sudden, you discover that I'm a universalist. I grew up in a Christian tradition. My parents saw to it that I was in church every Sunday. They were never fanatics, but it was always a constant. And so that becomes a source of who I am. I grew up that way. I was fortunate that we moved around a lot. But when I was about to enter the third grade, we moved to Crawfordsville, Indiana, and joined the First Christian Church there. They were always disciples, always Christian Church disciples. But we went to Crawfordsville, and Paul Millian was the pastor there. And for 10 years, while I was growing up, every Sunday that we were in town, I sat under Paul Millian's preaching. I went off to college, and this was 49, 50, 51, 52. I was in a fraternity house full of ex-GIs out of World War II. Some of them hard struggle people, drank too much, told too many stories. But then in every bull session in the world, and they had all the answers. But they wanted to see if this young ministerial student could somehow talk to them. And so they would ask these tough questions, and I would peel myself off the well as best I knew. It was 2 years before I got back to Crawfordsville to hear Paul Millian preach again. The light went on. Everything that I used to explain my faith, Paul Millian had taught me. Matt and Lizzie McIntyre, who was my Sunday school teacher, as a third, fourth, fifth grade, sixth grade teacher. Lizzie was a person with severe scoliosis, was unable to find employment, mount anything, and so when my mother had to go back to teaching, she hired Lizzie to come in and watch my younger brother and to fix me my lunch every day. So I got Lizzie McIntyre on Sunday morning and on Monday and Tuesday. So she's one of my saints. Now, so if we have God in our experience in this way, this goes forever and ever and ever, and is always expanding. Now then, the next thing is that we're going to change the graphic a little bit. This is your experience and my experience. Here we find the teachings of the religions of the world. Lao Tse Tung, Buddha, Muhammad, Jesus, Moses, Elijah. Oh, yes, the story of Elijah. Elijah slew the 400 priests of Baal and ran for his life. And he went to the mountain. He had to somehow escape Jezebel. And he went to the mountain and hid himself away in a cave. Remember the rest of the story?
Is he the one who never died or walked into heaven?
Beg pardon?
Is he the one that never died but walked right into heaven?
Yes, that's one of the stories. But when he went to the mountain running for his life, There was a windstorm, but God was not in the windstorm. There was an earthquake, but God was not in the earthquake. There was a great fire, but God was not in the fire. God was in the still, small voice. The still, small voice. And so those of you who listen to the people who speak to you and suggest that sometimes the best prayers are those where we sit down and shut up. All right. All right. Recently, I ran across a quotation by a theological professor who say that prayer is mostly talking to ourselves. I find that less than helpful. It is not just talking to ourselves. Oh yes, there are times when we need to kind of talk to ourselves. But the real thing is that as we go along, our still small voice is back here. Where the lines cross. Can you see that? I've been over here out of the way. It's in this crossover that our meditation, our prayers, enable us to encounter the holy back there. So the holy is definitely involved in our experience. And what's more, it's that way with our friends, our families, and all the rest of the world. And if this was projected far enough, that line would go out and our projections there would go that way. So that our experiences are there in the unconscious. We don't experience it directly very often, but it is definitely there in the unconscious. Let me tell you a personal story. I retired from serving as the pastor of the First Christian Church in Highland, Indiana, in January of 1993. Jane had been a member of that church. My first wife died with cancer, and then Jane and I met Jane at church, and after a courtship, we were married there. My brother, who was a lay pastor, got to do the service, and I shook him up because I knew the liturgy better than he did. Had to feel sorry for him back off and let him leave me. But anyway, Jan and I retired and moved to Florida. And we've been down there about 3 years. And one night, I'm peacefully sleeping in my bed. And I'm startled awake with the vision of a friend, fully bearded, who had died. I mean, it was one of those sharp wake-up things, which I sat up in bed, and it was an instantaneous, I awake, I had this dream, it didn't make sense, but I had two friends with beards. One was Dean, and the other was Nora. And I got up that morning, and I was mulling this over. It's one of those things that you cannot understand or deal with. You have to process that way. And I came within that much of making a phone call to one of them. I would have been wrong. 3 days later, I get a note from this man's widow. saying, Nord had passed away the day that I had that dream. You suppose there's a connection back there? I'm convinced. I had one other similar kind of experience, but I was unable to verify it. That one I was verified because I got this little note from his wife. All right, we have that kind of thing. And so our prayers, our thoughts, our communication with one another, there are times we get the feeling that one of our kids is in trouble, and we make the phone call. And sure enough, there's been an issue that we have to consider. You've had that experience? Yeah. We get those nudges, we'll call them. But where is it taking place? It's back here. It's back there. It's in the unconscious. We didn't get the phone call. We just knew that we needed the call. Okay. Now then, there's one other dimension on this that troubles us. For lack of a better word, we call this evil. If we're going to be sensitive to the unconscious and what we can gain, we have to be honest and know that evil is there just as well as the good things. But how do we fend ourselves? Well, one way that we do it is by turning to a little book for the Unitarian Universalist Church, and we have our seven principles. Now, by the way, this book has on the cover Gail Wood's name, and she bought it to look at and see if we shouldn't have that for new members. I would recommend it, but I also would recommend it to you, because there are probably some things that you've forgotten or didn't know at all. Okay, I was asking Gail before the service this morning, what does it cost? She said $9. I encourage you to sign up and let her order you a copy. It's there. So, we have this. You suppose I'm a promoter? Yeah, you're right. anyway, this little book is there. But sometimes, seven principles we can't remember. How about four words? Can you remember four words? Okay. They go in sequence. You're in trouble. Well, get your little ink marker and mark it on your arm. The first one is wisdom. We've grown up knowing what is right. Almost all of us know what is right. And so, when we encounter things from the sphere of the evil, we can look at them and say, you know, they say that's a good idea, but that's evil. There are a group of people in this country who think that everybody ought to have their own AK-47. That's evil, my friends. Yeah. That is evil. And you can think of some other things that are there. So we have to sort things out based on what is wise and right and good and true. Then we need the second thing, and that's compassion. The first one was what?
Wisdom.
The second one is compassion. We have some people now in this country who say somehow we've got to insist that this is what is right and everybody else is wrong. But they're not very compassionate. Because they would want to scorn those whose skin is a different color, or those who had a different opinion about a woman making her own choices about her lives, or about the need for our society to be just and fair to people who are working for wages that won't sustain life. We need compassion, my friends. So the first one is
wisdom.
And the second one is
compassion.
What's the third? Forgiveness. Forgiveness. We have to forgive those people who somehow did it messed up. Excuse me. We have to somehow forgive. I know a man who discovered that his marriage was a little rocky, and it was suggested to him that he use the Lord's Prayer meditatively and repeatedly. Now, when I was a kid growing up in Cartlesville, Indiana, several of my friends were Catholics, and they would talk about going to confession, and the priest would tell them to compensate for their sins, they should repeat the Lord's Prayer 5 times. Our Father who art in heaven, our Father I am. Have you ever tried doing that? This man discovered that when he got to the part of the prayer which says, "Forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us," he began to realize that he was not perfect. He was erroneous. He was judgmental. He was not being kind. And then he began to realize that if he was forgiving of his wife and he was forgiving of himself, the relationship would improve. I suggest. So forgiveness is one of those three, and the last one is, as you might well imagine, is love, compassionate, outward caring for the other. It is the outward caring for the other. And that's when all of the good that we encounter in the eternal comes to life, because we are reinforced by those things. Now, there are a number of spiritual treasures that have been written down through the years. Some of you may remember the prayer of St. Francis. Wonderful. I got to recently reading at a suggestion of a teacher, college professor, seminary professor, that you read Origen's early documents. Part of the stuff, more contemporaneously, I was had the opportunity to hear Howard Thurman, a Negro pastor who had a powerful influence on him. Martin Luther King Jr. Howard Thurman had a wonderful meditation on the Lord's Prayer in 1948 that he delivered to an ecumenical youth group that I attended in Grand Rapids, Michigan. A wonderful man. He had a very intimate way of speaking. He had a podium in front of him and he would lean on it and speaking to the microphone, and electric. the electric. And he's written a number of things. The group that encourages his, the reading of his works more often than others are the Quakers. And he was a disciple. At that time, he was the pastor of All People's Church in San Francisco. He was a marvelous teacher. So I treasure his work. Dr. Kagawa of Japan wrote a marvelous book back in the 30s, The Power of Love. Yeah, there are many of them. You've got your own choices. I recently added to my library now, I would say, poem, an Oriental philosopher. Now, all of those things are encountered back here. They're encountered there. They're recorded in words, but you begin to absorb those kind of things. Some of us read Psalms. Some of us read scriptures of the New Testament or the Old Testament. Doesn't matter what you use, but practice being in contact with the unconscious. For those are the things that are going to pull us through in those moments of darkness. So the first word is wisdom, compassion,
forgiveness,
and the last one, love. Now, that you can take home today. You know, it is here, and we are all people of prayer, and we want to give ourselves to the Holy so that we can indeed serve one another and support one another in our pilgrimage together. So let it be.
Is there any comments or questions?
Yes. Yes.
Two things. One is, I was like so amazed when you said your Christian church comes from the Presbyterian church. The Jewish congregation of Blue Ridge was hosted by the Presbyterian church of Blue Ridge.
Okay.
And when there was the shooting in Pittsburgh, the two congregations came together for a memorial service. It was one of the most beautiful,
marvelous
experiences.
Marvelous.
So I feel like the Jews and the Presbyterians are so together.
Yes, I would hope that would always be true.
And the other thing is that the part that puzzles me is the times, and this happened twice, that I'm at auto accidents, and I was not in control of my vehicle. God is in control. And I both times walked away.
I don't know how to deal with those kind of things either. I am where I am because I believe that we live in a strange and wonderful world that began to be accumulated out of the junk of space 4.5 billion years ago. We are descendants of humanoid type persons, which dates from, shall we say, 5-6 million years ago. We're a very old race. We're a very old race.
If you go back far enough, we're the descendants of stars.
You could say that, since we came out of stardust. Yeah. How is God, you know, I'll see, I'm trying to remember. There is a book by an English author, English theologian. Your God is Too Small. Some of you may have run across that title. But one of the things that he, you know, he has some cute ways of saying things. He said, if you think that God is one who is going to be a shorter cook, you know, we offer up our prayers and bang, it's going to happen. Your God is too small. And he goes through a whole series of those, and it's been several years since I read it, but I remember specifically, I remember the short order cook. You know, God is not the mechanical force that saves us from the wreck. Like it is to me. God is that which sustains us in the midst of those conflicts. We're paying attention. And we're being grateful. I can add to that list of four if you want. but it's that kind of understanding, boy, that God is way bigger. The force for good is way, way bigger than the forces for evil.